Today, exactly 2 years after Oregon's Death with Dignity law went into effect, the House of Representatives passed legislation designed to overturn it. The Pain Relief Promotion Act would bar access to the kind of drugs terminally ill patients use to end their lives. It would also promote palliative care, vigorous pain management for dying patients. In the 2 years that the Oregon law has been in effect, only a couple of dozen people have obtained drugs so that they could take their own lives. One of them was Patrick Matheny, a carpenter in the coastal town of Coos Bay. At the age of 42, he developed amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, better known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Matheny voted for the Death with Dignity law, not knowing that he would soon qualify under its requirements. Earlier this year, he killed himself. Colin Fogarty of Oregon Public Broadcasting spoke to Matheny over the course of the last 5 months of his life, and he prepared this profile.
The first time I visited Patrick Matheny, it was a cold, rainy day last November. Inside his small mobile home, Patrick was surrounded by a computer, a TV, and a jar full of cigarettes, specially prepared with white plastic filters. Family photos showed Matheny as a fit man with red hair and a red beard. But by this time, ALS had shrunk his body considerably. Everyday acts had become excruciatingly difficult. And then, when he was told he had 6 months to live, he decided he wanted to control the time and manner of his death.
At a certain point, I believe that the quality of life reaches such a low point that I don't think it's worth staying alive for. I don't consider my condition or any other terminal patient to be suicide. It's a shortening of the process we're already caught up in.
Matheny spent weeks maneuvering through the legal and medical requirements of the Death with Dignity Act. The law requires consultations with at least two doctors and a 15-day waiting period. Finally, Patrick received deadly drugs, which he kept in his refrigerator.
That's it.
Patrick showed me an innocent-looking manila envelope. Inside was a bottle of capsules. To end his life, he would dissolve them in a drink. But getting the means to end his life proved the easiest part of Patrick's struggle. The reality of following through proved more daunting. When I talked with him again in December, Patrick's condition had deteriorated. It took him longer to speak, and I had more trouble understanding him. His mood had also changed. He said planning his final moments had become more complicated.
And as it gets closer, it gets a little more emotional. I at one point thought that I could do it with the family all gathered around. But I see that as it gets closer, that's really not a feasible way to do it. The emotions are just too strong.
Patrick's family supported his decision to end his own life. It pained them to see him suffer. But they grieved over the thought of losing him. In his own mind, Patrick debated whether it was better to remain with his family or save them and himself the agony of end-stage ALS.
You know, you look at both sides of it, it would be somewhat, I guess, relieving for me to be around for a while, but then it's torturous to have to be around in this condition.
Struggling with the question of when to die made the holidays heart-wrenching for Patrick and his family. He assumed he wouldn't be around much longer. When I came again a few months later in mid-February, Patrick told me he had experienced a kind of rejuvenation. He was more active on the internet, contacting fellow ALS patients. Even though his ability to speak and move was deteriorating, he said he had decided, for the time being, he would remain alive.
And I was really trying to force myself to take the medication, but came to the realization that I just wasn't ready to do it. Reflection. I think that I hadn't and still haven't completely given up on the idea that I could possibly beat this illness.
But as the weeks passed, Patrick became more tormented by a practical dilemma. The assisted suicide law states the patient must ingest the drugs orally. But Patrick worried if he waited too long, he would not be able to swallow the drugs himself. At the same time, he wasn't at a point yet where he felt it was the right time to schedule his death.
But I kept telling myself, well, I think when my hands are gone, I'll feel it's the right time. So then I tried scheduling it that when my hands were gone, but then it didn't feel like the right time. So I've come to resolve is that I would just wait for that inner feeling and quit trying to set up arbitrary criteria for when I think it's the right time.
As he spoke, I could tell ALS had erased most of Patrick's facial expressions. His mood showed in his eyes.
I feel down quite a bit, but it's more like down like sad, but not down to where, you know, in a black mood or grumpy and mean to people. It doesn't seem to be that far down.
Still, Patrick said his thinking was not clouded by depression. And he stressed the relief he felt knowing lethal drugs were tucked safely in his refrigerator.
This is not to have the medication should that feeling come to me. To not have to prolong life if I've reached the point where life is basically not life as I see it.
That moment came a few weeks after this interview. It was soon after he could barely speak anymore. Patrick's father, Robert Matheny, said his son had always been a talker, and losing that ability was the final straw. On Wednesday, March 10th, he took his lethal drugs. But his deteriorating condition kept him from being able to end his life on his own. He had waited too long. Robert Matheny says his son turned to his brother-in-law, Joe, for help, mixing the lethal drugs with a chocolate drink.
That's what he did. He mixed the thing for him, and he put a straw in it and held it for him, and he kept Pat awake until Patrick took the final doses of it. And it was enough, but Joe was quite shaken up, too, because he knew the consequences if it didn't work.
Patrick could have lingered in a coma. Despite the tension, though, he kept his humor until the end.
I think it was probably joking about their job that they were trying to do. You know, come on, Patrick, wake up. And Patrick, I guess, would say, tell him, yeah, well, I just need a little nap here. No, you're not going to get it. So, you know, they were back and forth, he said. And you know, it's just a case where Patrick did not lose his sense of humor in any way, shape, or form. He had a dry sense of humor, but it was a sense of the humor, nevertheless.
Robert Matheny says in the end, his son got what he wanted, to control the time of his death himself. Back when I first met Patrick in the fall, he made it clear that's what was most important to him.
I need to hold on to as much independence as I can, down to wherever my end is. You know, you could describe it as bullheaded, pig-headed, or whatever, but I just can't seem to let go of that.
For NPR News, I'm Colin Fogarty in Portland, Oregon.